Tonight's topic, of all the topics that I saw that were suggested for women's shiur, first of all, thank you very much for coming out in the snow and the very, very freezing cold this evening. And for those who hired babysitters to come, that's really, I don't know if the Rebbetzin would have done that. I do know if the Rebbetzin would have done that, actually. So
I was going to go babysit for at least.
So thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you. So of all the topics that were requested over the course of this year, I guess this one surprised me the most because it's highly specific. And I don't know, it's fish and meat. It's an excellent topic. I'm just curious, before we start, I'm sure I'm going to touch upon any issues that do come up, because I think we'll be able to do a pretty decent job of covering the entire topic. But the most common questions, as far as I see them, but you could tell me if I'm totally off over here. The most common questions I get relating to fish and meat are the following. Number one, during the 9 days especially, but really year-round, you want to grill fish on your barbecue. So can you use your Fleishig barbecue to grill fish? That comes up a lot, as I said, especially during the 9 days. Number two, you are doing a recipe and the recipe calls for a certain sauce and you didn't look carefully at the package, and then you look afterwards and you see that in the ingredients are some type of fish. There's some sort of omega oil or some type of fish in the anchovies, in the Worcestershire, I can't pronounce it, so Worcester sauce. So you discover that there's a fish ingredient and that sauce is supposed to go with the meat. Are you allowed to use it? L'chadchila, b'dieved, all of that. Number three, how important is it, if at all, to have a designated fish pot? Many people remember that their bubbies and their mothers had a pot that they used for gefilte fish, and they weren't sure if that was because that pot made gefilte fish the best, and they didn't want to ruin it on anything else, or was that really a halacha thing, that they would designate a pot for fish? Am I missing any big ones?
If cooking meat and fish in the oven at the same time.
Ah, cooking meat and fish in the oven at the same time. What?
Cooking fish in a meat oven.
Or in a meat oven. Okay, either at the same time or one right after the other. Okay, so that's another important one. So I think we'll get to all of these. The basis of the issue of fish and meat. What is the basis of the issue in fish and meat?
Sakana.
Yeah, the basis of the issue is not an issue of halacha per se. It's an issue of sakana. The Torah tells us a few times how careful we have to be with our health. And Rav Schechter often remarks how people are sometimes super makbid to make sure that they use a separate fork for the fish than they use for the chalent, and they'll wash out their mouth and they'll do everything super makbid. But then they'll eat ridiculous amounts of kishka. They'll smoke, a pack a day, and it's a little absurd. Meaning we're so makbid about issues of sakana, we should be makbid about issues of sakana that we know to be dangerous, but because that's what this is. It's an issue of sakana. It's not like some mystical issue of sakana. It was a practical concern that it's dangerous to have fish and meat together. That was the assumption, that it was dangerous, which begs the question, do we still assume that way? I mean, the best of medical science that we have seems to offer no such concern that fish and meat is going to be a problem. You know, the differences between certain hashkachos that you have, sometimes, they have to create nuances of difference in order to justify having a hashkacha. So in some of the hashkachos, like, the differences boils down to how big the wall is that they make in the kitchen of the restaurant between the fish and the meat. Meaning, is it this high or is it this high? I've seen this this debate being had. You know, should we have, even within our own hashkacha, the discussion has been brought up, should we have like a mahadrin level where the wall between the fish and the meat is this high? Like, so the whole issue is an issue of sakana. The Rambam in Hilchos Rotzeach writes that a person who does unhealthy things says that I have the right to do whatever I want. It's my body. I could do whatever I want with it. Ram says such a person is chayiv malchus. One is not allowed to say that because it's my health, it's up to me to determine how I behave. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us our health. He gave us our physical bodies, and we have to take care of it. That's our responsibility in this world. So where does this Isser come from? There's a Gemara in Maseches Pesachim and Daf Ayin Vavam Beis that says that if fish is cooked together with meat, it can't be eaten because it will cause davar acher. Now, davar acher, in the terms of the Gemara, is always, it's another way of saying the unmentionable. The thing that's so awful, we can't even mention it. So it's sometimes it refers to something very lewd, sometimes it refers to something just that we don't want to refer to. So over here, Rashi understands that davar acher means tzara'as. That it's such a horrible, you know, in Yiddish you have like that, that when people get Rachman al Tzlan, if people are diagnosed with cancer, so what do they say? They don't say cancer. What do they say? Yena machla, right? They say yena machla. What does yena machla mean? You know, it's davar acher. It's the, you can't even say it. It's such a horrible thing that we don't want to mention it. So that's how the Gemara uses that terminology. Now it's talking about if fish and meat are cooked together. It doesn't mean in the same oven. It means literally cooked together, similar to lo sevashel gedi b'chalev imo. Like the Torah says, one cannot cook milk and meat together. So when one does that with fish, it can lead to davar acher. And the Shulchan Aruch paskins that a person shouldn't even eat fish and meat together. It takes it to the next level. Not just not to eat them if they were cooked together, but not even to eat them together if they were cooked separately. Now, the major question, as I pointed out before, is, does this whole thing still apply nowadays? Is this still an issue? The Shulchan Aruch quotes a lot of things that a person is advised against doing based on health concerns, a lot of things that are mentioned by Chazal, and the Shulchan Aruch says that, for example, a person shouldn't drink liquids that had been left out, exposed, overnight. You know, if you have one of these nice water things where you can just close the top and it's totally sealed, so then it's in a bottle. But what if you unscrew the top and you leave it exposed out overnight? So the Gemara says you're not supposed to do that. Why? Because of all the snakes that are slithering around our homes and that can just get their venom right into the liquid, and you're not going to know, and it's going to be poisonous, and you're going to drink it, and who knows what's going to happen? Happy dreams tonight. So who knows what's going to happen? When you drink it the next day. And the Shulchan Aruch says, yeah, but nowadays in our modern culture, in 16th century Tzvat or whatever, we don't have snakes, you know, slithering around our houses, and therefore it's not a problem anymore. Shulchan Aruch explicitly permits it. So you would expect when it comes to fish and meat, the Shulchan Aruch is going to say, yeah, but nowadays we don't know of any danger of fish and meat, and therefore it should be mutter. Shulchan Aruch doesn't say that, though. He quotes the halacha that fish and meat, even though medicine recognizes no health hazard in the simultaneous consumption of fish and meat, Shulchan Aruch says one should separate fish and meat. A lot of the medical advice they have in the Gemara, the Rav Ramban and Rambam writes, it's usher to follow. Dumb of Barosho, a person is taking their life into their own hands. You know, the Gemara in Maseches Ksuvos describes doing brain surgery. Can you imagine trying to do a brain surgery with a Gemara open in front of you, you know, just trying to follow the instructions? Okay, so where do I place these leeches now? It's not something that we would advise a person to do. Rav Shach, there's even several dapim of Maseches Gittin that are just one after the other, all about these health issues, and it has like no halacha or even agarata. It's just health issue after health issue. It's the best of Talmudic medicine, but like, you know, as far as our medicine is concerned, we wouldn't follow any of it. Rav Shachter holds that it's Bittul Torah to learn it. He holds that the Daf Yomi is Mevatel Torah for 3 days every cycle, because when he learns Gittin, he skips those Dapim and he makes a Siyum anyway, because he learned all the Maseches Gittin. He doesn't think that it's somewhat of a Chiddush. Rav Moshe Shapiro, who just passed away over Shabbos, was Adam Gadol Ad Ma'od, I'm sure would say otherwise. He had some very strong opinions about the Chachma of Chazal and how broad that Chachma was, and how ultimately truthful everything they said was, and that there was nothing that was just medical advice. So it's not everyone agrees to that approach, but that's his approach. But be that as it may, Shulchan Aruch is willing to say, I'm going to dismiss certain concerns that I know practically aren't concerns anymore. Yet he doesn't dismiss fish and meat. So the Yad Ephraim, one of the commentaries on the Sardis Shulchan Aruch, quotes from a lot of other poskim who say that we still have this isser, and maybe the difference between this and the exposed liquid is that exposed liquid is we know exactly what the concern was. The concern was that there was going to be a snake, he was going to leave its venom in the liquid. and we know that we don't have snakes. Fish and meat, we just know that it caused some sort of health problem. Now, we don't know everything there is to know about health, and if you were to look at a chart for healthy eating from the 1950s, pretty advanced as far as history goes, you know, pretty recent, I should say. So what's the healthiest way to eat? Lots of red meat. You know, like the whole chart would be like a death chart today. It would be, you know, it's the cause of heart disease. It's everything. And yet, so we don't know. We know that we're still discovering things. So something that you can't easily see, where you can identify, oh, that's the problem that they were talking about, and it's just vaguely referred to as a health problem that's going to lead to Davar Acher, and we don't know why, we don't know what sort of enzymes are interacting, what sort of acids are created in our stomach as a result of the consumption of different things. So we don't know yet. So it could be that we don't know. That's the opinion of many poskim, that we still have to be concerned about this. However, the Magen Avraham in Or Chaim Simon Kuf Ayin Gimel writes that there are many natural phenomena mentioned in the Gemara that simply don't apply anymore today. And eating meat and fish together is just another example of something that used to be a concern, no longer an issue. And in fact, the Rambam doesn't mention it. The Rambam, he mentions all these halachas of what we are and are not allowed to do and how to maintain good health, because the Rambam was very concerned that a person should remain healthy. He advises very strongly how much sleep a person should get at night, how a person should make sure what he should do after eating in order to digest food properly. The Rambam was very, very clear about this, and yet he leaves out, doesn't even mention, doesn't breathe a word about fish and meat together. Not a word about it. So the Acharim try to figure out. It's a little odd that the Shulchan Aruch quotes it and the Rambam doesn't, because most of the Shulchan Aruch is taken straight from the Rambam. Very often he'll just even use the same words as the Rambam. It's just organized a little bit differently. It doesn't cover everything the Rambam has, and he takes many other opinions into account. But when he can, he even maintains the language of the Rambam. And yet it doesn't appear in the Shulchan Aruch. So the Chassam Sofer already explains in the Tshuva why it is that the Rambam left it out, and he gives two suggestions. First, he suggests that maybe the Rambam knew that the Gemara, when it spoke about fish and meat, was concerned about a specific type of fish. And that type of fish is a fish that we don't have anymore, and therefore the whole thing is not a concern. Maybe it was limited to one type of fish, but all other fish pose no danger, and nowadays we don't know what that fish is, or we don't have that fish, and therefore there's no concern. Alternatively, the Chassam Sofer suggests, the Rambam knew that he was a doctor, and he knew that there was no danger. And he knew that whether you call it that there never was a danger, when Chazal's medicine was just the best medicine they had at the time, and it was inaccurate, or whether you want to be a little bit firmer than that and say, no, it was a danger, but nishtana hativim, that the nature has changed over time. There are certain things that we know the nature has changed. That's certainly in Hilchos Nida, there's a lot. These are things that were observable phenomena, that it's not like you could say, oh, they misinterpreted, like things that they clearly had, observable phenomena that have changed in terms of women's regularity and different things that are very, in terms of becoming a nida while nursing, all these kinds of things. There are things that have clearly changed over time. So maybe you chalk this up to nishtana ateva, that it used to be that fish and meat together was dangerous. Nowadays, it's no longer dangerous. You can ask any doctor, and they'll tell you that there's no problem with fish and meat. Maybe that's why the Rambam left it out. The Gra is quoted as having said that he doesn't believe you can look at the best of medical research to determine whether something is dangerous for a Jew. He said, because medical research is often done on non-Jews, and we have a different constitution. We have a different makeup. Now, we know that there's such a thing as genetic illnesses that are limited to a certain segment of the population, to people of African descent, to Ashkenazi Jewish descent. There is such a notion that people's genetic makeup can predispose them to certain illnesses. Certainly, Tay-Sachs was something that was clearly an Ashkenazi Jewish type of disease. So maybe the Gra says, you never know, maybe there are certain things that are perfectly healthy for non-Jews, but are not healthy for Jews. Maybe we have a weaker constitution. Maybe we have a stronger constitution. The Gemara chalks it up to the idea that that non-Jews eat shkatzim or umasim, that they eat all sorts of things that we're not allowed to eat, and maybe that changes their immune system in some way or another. We don't know, but the Grah thinks that we can't bring rayas from medical research, unless the medical research was done on Orthodox Jews. That would be a very controversial thing to apply in other areas nowadays. I think generally we assume that we trust medical research because it's the best knowledge that we have. But be that as it may, so the Rambam doesn't mention it, the Chasam Sofer has these explanations why the Rambam doesn't mention it, but generally speaking, that's of little relevance to us because the Shulchan Aruch does mention it. So the fact that the Shulchan Aruch mentions it, l'chora, should be enough to say that it's at least a concern. Okay, so one is not supposed to eat fish and meat together. So what do you do in between eating fish and meat? You have gefilte fish as a first course, or salmon, or any other type of fish. I'm not telling you what to serve. But you have fish as a first course, then you're going to have meat afterwards. So the Tur writes in Yardei Asum Kuftas Zayin that he quotes from his father, the Rush, that his father would wash his hands and he'd eat bread that was soaked in wine in between eating fish and meat. That way he'd wash out his mouth, and any residue left on his hands, from the fish, will be gone because he's going to wash his hands, and he'll clear out his mouth, and any taste of the fish will be gone from his mouth by having the bread that's soaked in the wine. Very similar to what the Shulchan Aruch recommends between eating milk and meat, washing the mouth between milk and meat. Over there, though, the Shulchan Aruch says you have to have a solid food and a liquid food, not a solid dipped in a liquid, but that there should be a solid and a liquid. Now, over here, maybe we're a little more lenient because, again, we're not sure exactly what this is. The Shulchan Aruch quotes this, that this is standard practice. And the Grudge just points out, you know, if you eat with your hands, then you got to wash your hands. But if you eat with a fork and knife, then there's no need to wash your hands. It would make more sense to wash your fork. Meaning the idea of washing the hands was not a din. It's not like a netilas yadayim. They have to wash your hands. The idea was, get rid of whatever residue is there. So where's the fish residue going to be? Nowadays, hopefully, if we eat like civilized people, it's going to be on the fork. So you wash off the fork in between eating fish and meat, or as many of us do, we have a fish fork, and then we'll have a separate fork for eating meat. And then to have something in your mouth, some liquid, some solid, something in your mouth. That's what the Shulchan Aruch recommends. The Rama for Ashkenazim, the Darkei Moshe, writes in the name of the Mordechai, there's probably no real danger in eating fish and meat that weren't actually cooked together. Even if you're concerned about fish and meat, the Gemara only said if they're cooked together. So probably one after the other is not such a big deal anyway. So he said you don't have to wash your hands and your mouth and in between fish and meat. And the Rama quotes this lahalacha, but he says, you know, the minhag is to eat some sort of solid food and drink liquid in between fish and meat. So there's a minhag, a widespread minhag in Klal Yisrael, that people have a l'chaim or something in between fish and meat. That's when l'chaims are traditionally passed around. It's not only during the Haftorah, but that's when l'chaims are traditionally passed around, is in between the fish and the meat. I remember the first time Rav Schachter was in North Woodmere for Shabbos, so he had lunch by our house, and my in-laws were over, and my father-in-law enjoys scotch once in a while, a nice l'chaim. And after the fish, he asked Rosh Hashanah if he wanted a l'chaim, and he took a l'chaim, and between the fish and the meat. So after Shabbos, I wrote up like notes of hanhagos that it was probably annoying for him that people are like watching his every move, but no, that's what we do. So I wrote up notes of his various hanhagos, and I sent it to Shai to see if I got anything wrong or if there's any chidushim in what I saw Rav Schachter do over Shabbos. So I said that, you know, he had a l'chaim between the fish and the meat, which seems to be Minhag Yisrael. I remember clearly because a little bit later in the meal he was telling a story and he's like, I keep on talking because I think I'm a little drunk from the when I sent that to Rav Shai, he sent back to me some haaris on my notes. He said he's never ever makbid about that. That was a when in Rome moment, you know. So he gave in to my father-in-law's peer pressure got Rav Schachter to drink, which made him very open, and he shared a lot. But He was not makbid about that at all, because he's not so concerned about this whole fish and meat thing to begin with. Like I mentioned before, his attitude is more of a concern with things that we know to be unhealthy, that a person should try to make sure that they have a healthy diet and that they get a fair amount of exercise and these kinds of things, that a person, and not to smoke and not to do things that we know to be dangerous. So that's what to do in between fish and meat. That's the basic practice. Again, not super serious, but that's the basic practice. What about cooking fish and meat in the same oven at the same time? So the Gemara quotes a machlokas about having kosher and non-kosher food in the same oven at the same time. So we would think, oh my God, I mean, kosher. And when the Gemara says in the same oven at the same time, it means both uncovered. If they're both uncovered in the oven at the same time. So the Gemara says there's a machlokas whether recha milsa or recha lav milsa, that there's assumed to be aroma of the two foods that is being exchanged between the two foods. Is that substantial enough to cause a problem? The details of recha are significant. It's a major sugya in Yeridaya, but the Shulchan Aruch paskins that lichachila, you should not, if you heard it here first, you should not cook uncovered kosher and non-kosher food in your oven at the same time. You should not cook, probably, milchig and fleishig, uncovered, in your oven at the same time. But, surprisingly, probably to a lot of people, the Shulchan Aruch says, b'di'eved, if you didn't, if kosher food was cooked in the oven, uncovered, together at the same time as non-kosher food, recha lav milsa, recha is insignificant, the aroma is not significant, and the food can be eaten. Now it happens to be that there's another concern that the Gemara doesn't address, and it's not abundantly clear why the Gemara does not address it, called Zeya, which is different than Recha, and may pose a problem. So I would not, you know, ask a Shaila if you have this situation come up, if your housekeeper was making her pork chops at the same time you were making your lamb chops in the oven. You probably have other problems if your housekeeper is making pork chops in your oven. But that part is not our emphasis for right now. If one of the foods is completely covered, and this is if one of the foods is completely covered, there is no recha, because the recha is only by the aroma escaping the pot when there's a significant amount of it. But maybe it wasn't airtight and the foil wasn't. That doesn't create recha. That's not enough to create recha. If it's uncovered, it would create recha. So the question is, to what extent are we worried about recha in this case? So the Rama writes, l'chadchila, we should not roast meat and fish together in the same oven at the same time, meaning uncovered. Whenever we say can't be in the same oven at the same time, it means uncovered. If something's covered, anything goes. However, even the Rama writes, b'di'eved, if you cook fish and meat together in a single oven, you're allowed to eat the fish and you're allowed to eat the meat. And the Aruch HaShulchan supports this shita of the Rama, that despite whatever other opinions there may be, you only have to worry about what the Rama says. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that that's fine, b'di'eved. The Marshal disagrees. The Shach quotes from the Marshal that a person can even cook meat and fish l'chadchila in the same oven at the same time, uncovered. Because he says, you know, even if you say recha milsa, that the aroma is significant, that means that when you're dealing with kashrus, the aroma is significant. But we're going to invent a new problem of aroma when it comes to health? Whatever the hell, we don't even know what the health issue was, but the Gemara says don't cook them together, you know, in the same dish. That's as far as we know that the Gemara actually said. So we're going to say that it extends to the recha also. Too much of a chiddush, says the Marshal. Even the chadchila you're allowed to do, the Marshal says. However, the Shach then quotes the shita of the Be'er Sheva, that even though recha b'di'eved with kosher and non-kosher would be okay, the Be'er Sheva goes in the other direction. He says when it comes to fish and meat, even b'di'eved, it's not okay. So we have three opinions. The Rama who says, can't do it l'chadchila, but b'di'eved, if you did it, it's okay. You have the Marshal who says, you can even do l'chadchila, don't worry about it at all. And then you have the Be'er Sheva who says, No, no, can't do it lechachila. And if you did it, you got to chuck it. You got to throw it out because it is. We're concerned about recha. Why would I be more concerned about recha of fish and meat than I would be about pork chops and lamb chops? Right, pork chops and lamb chops. So b'diavid, you're allowed to have the lamb chops, no problem. But fish and meat, I'm going to be more concerned. So there is a concept that the Gemara says in Maseches Chulin that we apply in halacha called chamira sakanta me'isura. That we're more strict about sakana than we are about isser. And if this is assumed to be a sakana, we have to be stricter about this than we are about isser v'heter. So that's what the Be'er Sheva is based on. So at the end of the day, we probably paskin like the Ramah. Is it a good idea to keep fish and meat uncovered in the same oven at the same time? No, we would probably discourage it. But b'diavad, if you did it, everything's kosher. And people are allowed to eat it. You don't throw out the food. So that's what I would assume that we pass on. There is a sefer called Chelkas Binyamin, modern day contemporary commentary on Yaradeya, where he suggests that we should follow the strict approach unless it's a hefsin meruba. Which is always hard to define, hefsin meruba. What's called a hefsin meruba? You worked so hard cooking that whole meal, now you have to start again. And it's not that I can't afford it. It's not that, you know, exactly where we draw the line of hefsin meruba. Someone's sanity sometimes could be hefsin meruba. So it's not so clear. I don't know why he has to be so machmir. We have the Ramah, like the Aruch HaShulchan says. We have the Ramah. The Chachila don't do it. The Yavid, if you did, everything's kosher.
Could you, we generally don't cook milchiks right after fleishiks in the oven unless it's cool. Sometimes wait 24 hours, different opinions, whatever. Could you cook fish right after meat in the oven?
Yeah, so the concern, that concern is zeya. It's not even recha. That's a different concern of condensation coming on top of the oven and dripping back into the food. There are poskim, there are a variety of shitos, even with milchiks and fleishiks, about what you're allowed to do. 24 hours is probably the standard opinion. Rav Moshe was much more machmir than that. Rav Shecht is much more makel than that. There are different opinions about that. But I would think with fish and meat, maybe it's my Rebbe talking, to me. But I would think with fish and meat, we can be makel with that kind of thing.
Why aren't we discussing zeya at all with this?
The Gemara never mentions zeya at all by even milking and fleishik. It's a Mishnah in, I think, Maseches Mikvaos that talks about the Zeya of a Mikvah or something, and the Rishonim start applying it here and trying to figure out why the Gemara didn't mention it. So Zeya, the Rav Shecht points out, and I think the Aruch HaShulchan points out, Zeya is like some really thick level, amount of steam that's going to cause condensation, that's going to drip back into the food. You know, where that is probably most likely in a small oven, in a microwave certainly, where that's, the whole thing fills with steam and condensation. Because the whole thing over here, the Ram doesn't mention it. The Shulchan Aruch does, but we're not even sure that it's sakkar anymore. We have the Magen Avraham that says that we're not concerned about this anymore. Meaning there's enough out there that while we're still going to recognize this halacha, our netiya, our leaning is a little bit more to be lenient over here than we would be with issues that we thought of as actual sakana. What about using the same kalim for fish and meat cooking? Let's say the same pot for cooking fish and meat. So obviously, when it comes to meat and milk, we would never use the same pot. Poskim are not convinced that you have to be concerned about this when it comes to fish and meat. The Torah quotes Yesh Machmirim to have separate fish kalim, and it's quoted by the Levush and the Chachmas Adam as well. But the Shulchan Aruch doesn't even mention it. Doesn't say anything about separate kalim. And in the Yad Ephraim, Ephraim Zalman Margolio says that a person can use the same kalim for fish and meat even within 24 hours. You don't even have to wait 24 hours. If the fish and meat were cooked in the same pot simultaneously, so then the Pesachei Tshuva says you need to even kasher the kli in order to get all the flavor out of it. Because the infusion of taste is not strong enough to create an isser, but it's enough to absorb the taste of an isser that's been created in the pot when it was put there simultaneously. So that's Pesachei Tshuva's machmir about that. I don't think people do that generally. Fish and meat in the same pot simultaneously is very unlikely, because that you can't eat it. I mean, what would you do with it?
That's
exactly what the Gemara was saying.
Fish, it would just be if you did it by mistake.
Right. So if you did it by mistake, so which leads to the question of bittul b'shisha, because most of the time when you did it by mistake, it's not because you dumped an entire loaf of gefilte fish right next to a meatloaf, you know, and like, oh, by mistake, I had my meatloaf and my gefilte fish cooking next to each other. Most often, the mistake is a sauce, a something, an ingredient, something like that. So that raises the issue of bittul b'shisha. Generally, with non-kosher and kosher, or with milk and meat, we assume that if you have 60 times the volume of the kosher to the non-kosher, or the meat to the milk, or the milk to the meat, so it's mevatel, it nullifies the taste. The question is, but you're not allowed to do that on purpose, by iser. You're not allowed to take a little bit of milk and drop it into your chicken soup. It's way less than shishim. You know, that's the iser of ein mevatelin iser lechadchila. You're not allowed to create a situation of bittul on purpose. For example, let's say you don't like checking for bugs. Checking for bugs is really annoying. So what you do is you take all your buggy vegetables and you put them in your pot, and then the recipe doesn't really call for pulverizing the vegetables, but you've heard that if you pulverize all the vegetables, you'll be chopping up all the bugs, and then they become batel. If a bug is whole, it doesn't become batel. But if you chop them up, then they become batel b'shishim, because hopefully the bugs don't make up more than 1/60th of your entire soup, right? So you'll pulverize the whole thing, and it'll become batel b'shishim. So why is that not a simple aid, so that everyone should just take one of those hand blenders and into your chicken soup, and with all your dill and whatever, and I don't even know what the buggy vegetables are, and just pulverize the whole thing, and that, because that's a violation of Ein Mevatelin Iser L'Chadchila. Now, it happens to be that if the recipe calls for it, and the reason you're pulverizing it is because that's the recipe, it's not because you're trying to get rid of the iser, but that's how you make it. How do you make a smoothie? You pulverize all the strawberries and the blueberries and everything else. So that's how you make a smoothie. How do you make fruit-flavored yogurt? So the Chobani company, I can't imagine, I don't know, but I can't imagine that the Chobani company has mashkichim going through tons and tons of strawberries to make sure that there are no bugs in the strawberries. I don't know this for sure, I don't know what OU policy is, but I would imagine that they rely on the fact that the normal way to make strawberry-flavored yogurt is by pulverizing the strawberries. So whatever bugs are going to be, there are going to be batel b'shishim. I asked Rabbi Eisen what our Vad does, and he said that, like, in I thought that, like, the smoothies in Berrylicious, we don't care about where the strawberries come from, and they're just going to pulverize them all anyway. But he said no. He said we only let them get, like, bodek strawberries or whatever, that they, even though they're going to pulverize them. So I don't know. So we're very... Rabbi Eisen happens to be, like... he was like the OU bug expert for a long time. So, like, you know, everyone has their one thing that, like, they're very, very concerned. So bugs is sort of like his expertise. So there's no way we have any kulas on bugs going on in our restaurants. But anyway, so what about sakana? Can you be mevatel sakana? Does it become batel, and are you allowed to be mevatel it? So halachically forbidden foods can become batel b'shishim. Poskim debate whether sakana can be batel v'shishim. The Taz says that absolutely not. Even a mashahu of iser, of sakana, is going to cause problems. Because we know bittul is a halachic term. So that solves halacha. Let's say someone just puts a little bit of cyanide in your food. Right? It's not going to be so much. Just a little bit. So you wouldn't eat that food. Right, we don't assume bittul b'shishim on a little bit of something that's very, very dangerous. So the Taz writes that we absolutely cannot be mevatel, and he says, you know, the Maharil forbade someone from eating a small part of a fish that had fallen into a pot of cooking meat because of this concern. Now, it's possible that the case of the Maril was where there was not 60 times, but the Pesach Teshuvah points out from the fact that the Maril didn't advise the person to add more meat in order to nullify the fish, that obviously you wouldn't be able to do that, because it never becomes nullified. I mean, there's no iser of it. If it were true that it were able to become batel, there would be no problem of adding more to make it batel on purpose. So the Taz writes, there's no bittel, b'shishin. However, the Shach in the Kudus Kesef strongly disagrees. Shach says, Chamira Sakanta Meyasura is a principle that's limited to a case of a Safek. you're not sure. But bittul, we are sure. It loses all of its qualities in shishim. It's not recognizable at all, and therefore it's ki'ilu, it's gone. So you have this machlokas shachantaz, whether there's bittul by fish and meat. Why is this so critical? So what's the name of the sauce?
Worcestershire sauce.
So with that sauce, typically it's bittul b'shishim. So the question is, I remember when the first Susie Fishbane cookbook came out, and made the veal spinach loaf with the Worcestershire sauce, and every kosher supermarket had to change what they ordered and what they got, because that's what all the husbands were being sent to the supermarkets to buy. There were a lot of just people wandering more aimlessly than usual up and down the aisles of the supermarkets, but this was the major shaila. So the policy of the OU Kashrus division at the time was to label any sauce that contains more than 1.67% fish with an OU fish. That by the Ashkacha, it would say the words OU fish if it's not batal b'shishim, if there's more than shishim. If, however, it's less than that, it's less than shishim, then it would not be labeled OU fish. It would just say OU, and you look at the ingredients, and the ingredients may include whatever type of fish they have in it. Rav Belsky, in an internal psak in the OU documents, Rav Belsky's Zichron Levracha, said, but they should be makbid that in the ingredients it be clearly labeled that it's fish. Because there are a lot of consumers who may see omega-3 oil and have no idea that that means fish. Meaning there are a lot of things that have fancy ingredient names, but he said, okay, we don't have to put OU fish on it because we can rely on the shach that it's batal b'shishim. But what about the person who wants to be machmir like the Taz and assume that it can't become batal? He has to be able to find it somewhere, at least on the package. So you have to have it in such a way where it's clear on the package. Now, in an internal document in the OU, Rav Schechter, first in Tavshin Nun Gimel in 1993, gave this psak that he said it's a svek sveka when it's batal b'shishim. First of all, maybe the whole thing is not an issue anymore, like the Rambam and like the Magen Avraham, that fish and meat is just not a thing anymore. And even if it is still a thing, then maybe it's batal b'shishim. Maybe we hold like the shach that it's batal b'shishim. Therefore, we don't need to write OU fish on it if it's less than 1/60. If you want to be so machmir, you read the ingredients. But he thought as an OU policy, they don't have to be machmir about that. However, he then wrote a few years later, he wrote in an internal OU document, he says, B'shavua shavar, this is writing in Tavshin Nunvav in 1996, Pagashtias Kvod HaRav Rabbeinu Yaakov Hapfer Sheyichim in Baltimore. He said, I ran into Rabbi Hapfer from Baltimore. Va'amrli Shara B'daf HaKashra Shekasavnu Sheyesh Lahakal Barot of Sheyesh Batarov's Dagim V'derech Ol Mishtam Yishma Aflu Bishul Basar Mitam Svek Sveka. And he saw my psak about the Svek Sveka, that maybe it's not an issue at all, and even if it were an issue, it's Batal B'shishim. Va'alze Ta'an HaRav Rav Yaakov Shelfi Meitav Yediyaso, that based on his knowledge of the ingredients, Tam dag ha'anchovy, who kol kach chazak, shu nosein tam afilu biyoser mishishim. That anchovies have such a strong flavor that even if it's way less than 1.67%, you could still taste it. And the halacha is anything that's avida l'tayma, that's put there for flavor, and that you could still detect the flavor. The whole idea of shishim is not a magic number. It's that we assume when you have shishim, you can't detect the flavor anymore. But if something has a real pungent or strong flavor that you could detect even with less than shishim, then you should be worried about this. So Rav Schechter said, please, someone in the OU, look into this. Rav Schechter is not an ingredients expert. He paskins the halachas. Rav Belsky, Zichron Levracha, knew every ingredient and every combination of how things. That's not Rav Schechter's thing. He paskins the halacha, but he said, so someone's got to look into this. So the OU looked into it, and they said that in reality, the amount of anchovies in Worcestershire sauce is very small. That one of the mashkichim said in one place it was less than 0.3% of the ingredients, another place it was 0.16%. anchovies in the ingredients, and it's not noticeable by itself, but maybe with the combination of other flavors, it does something, but it's not really noticeable by itself. So they found Rabbi Hapfer's concerns were not a major concern as far as the sauce went. So in terms of that, it seems that in most of these sauces, unless you see the words OU fish on the label, we have very little to be concerned about. What about using the same barbecue? This is the only one we haven't touched on yet, right? Using the same barbecue for fish and meat. So the only concern would be if you don't clean the grill well. Meaning if you clean the grill really well, so then you're dealing with using the same pot. Then you're dealing with using the same kalim to handle fish and meat, which we said we can be makel on that issue of using the same kalim. If you don't clean it well, and there's actual meat residue still on the grill, not as good. That's not such a good thing. So sometimes I recommend getting like a metal netting or something to put over the grates, you know, to just to be extra cautious, and then you can put fish on the barbecue. I would think that would be enough if it's relatively clean, that a person could rely on that in terms of the concern of the fish and the meat. There is a whole other concern of fish and milk, which Ashkenazim generally are not concerned about, but there are many Sephardic poskim that are worried about fish and milk together. A lot of Sephardim won't eat fish and milk together, but it's likely based on a typo in the Beis Yosef, but we're not going to get into that right now. Maybe when we have a Sephardi women's shiur, we'll get into that topic. Okay, thank you again very much for coming out in the freezing cold weather. A question.
At a restaurant, like appetizers, tuna tartare with short ribs, coming at the same time.
Right.
I had it last week. I was like, oh.
I put bread and water in between.
Yeah, I didn't know. It was ridiculous. And sometimes the meat comes before the fish.
Right. So it's the same thing. Same.
What's the
so you take a drink and a bite of bread.
You have to have the meat and then drink, like, you have to have the fish first.
No, it doesn't. The fish doesn't have to come first, no.
That's a big focus between my in-laws always.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, like, really.
So. Tell them to give me a call.
Yeah, just
okay.
I'm like, the fish, like,